All right, before we kick into this episode, I just have a quick favor to ask. If you would do me the honor of heading over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to Slow Down Man, and subscribe, first of all. And if you are on Apple Podcasts, if you can go and leave a written review, an honest review, honestly, means the world. Really appreciate it. Appreciate you listening, and enjoy this episode. Escape and immediacy of a man cave, the focused attention and results of a therapist, the compassion and unconditional affection of your mom. We've got Rachel J on the show. Rachel, welcome. Thanks for slowing down with us.
Hi, Mitch. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Such a pleasure. Rachel, first off, can you just explain the slogan that I just read? And what you describe on your site is the Goldilocks zone.
Yes. So the Goldilocks zone is like that sweet spot. So essentially between those three sort of dynamics, I'm that sweet spot, because a lot of times for men, it's really, really hard to open up and be vulnerable. And I imagine that that's what you are trying to encourage people to do with your platform, which is why I'm so excited to be here.
Correct.
It's so important to be able to push out of that. You know, and there are so many reasons why, and that's getting into gender role conditioning, as far as why men don't feel safe and comfortable to reach out and seek support or talk about what's going on inside of them. And so, you know, a lot of times there's like a few safe spaces that men typically know about to go to, which is, you know, you've got your mom, who hopefully you have the kind of relationship where it's comforting and nurturing. And that is somebody that is a safe space that you can go to. And I know that that's not always the case. And then, you know, they're your guy friends, your buddies in the man cave, but maybe that conversation doesn't necessarily go deeper than just like, hey, you know, wow, what a game last week. Did you see the Super Bowl? You know, like,
football,
yeah, sex. Yeah. Football, sex, you know, things that men are socially, you know, encouraged to share their emotions on, but that's sort of the limit. So we don't really get deeper. And then with therapy, that is so stigmatized, even still, not as much as it used to be, but for men, there is still such a stigma around the idea of going to a therapist, because oftentimes we think of going to therapy as like a last resort. Like, right, things are so bad that my wife is making me go to therapy, or, you know, it's a last resort, or it's often seen as like a weakness that you need to go and talk about your feelings. You know, we get a lot of that sort of criticism and mockery from hyper-masculine other people in your life. So that's why, with that sort of slogan that you shared, I'm that sweet spot. I'm that Goldilocks zone, where it's like, you know, it's not so like professional and scary as a therapist, because I'm very approachable, as I hope you'll see.
I've noticed. Yeah.
Thanks. And you know, it goes deeper than the sort of like banter than you would get with male friends. And it's also different from, you know, going to your mom, because, you know, your mom is maybe going to tell you what you want to hear, but not necessarily what you need to hear, but also
she's a little biased.
Yeah. She's a little biased, and she may get a little too involved. So there's that separation and safety, you know, that you're going to a professional and it's undivided attention, that you're not having to reciprocate and be like, well, tell me, how are you? What's going on with you? Mm-hmm. It's fully. So that's why I am the Goldilocks zone.
The Goldilocks zone. I love
it.
It's a sweet spot, like you say. And I've never thought about it, but that's so true that like the all of these areas of opening and connection really for men do have something, some stigma around them, or they don't exactly feel the what the guy is looking to do in opening up. I know when I first went to a therapist, I was like, that's it, I'm crazy. That's
Yeah,
it.
that's another stigma. Not
Yeah, but
you're
then
like you're
I
either weak or you're crazy.
exactly. But then I walked out and I was like, ah, oh, I want to do this every day. It feels awesome. Oh my God. Yeah. So, right. So, can I ask, how did you get into this space? Like, what did, was there a certain man in your life where you noticed this? Like, where did you get this? I don't want to say fascination, but this passion for helping men move towards connection.
That's an awesome question. Thank you for asking that. I wouldn't say that there's just one man. There's, many that have sort of led me to where I'm at now. I would say most of where this sort of came from was my work as a Cuddlist. I don't know if you're familiar with what a Cuddlist is.
Cuddlist. No, please elaborate.
Okay, so Cuddlist is a company that has sort of like independent contractors who do professional cuddling. But it is so much more than cuddling because it's a lot having to do with consent education and reframing the word no to take the rejection out of it to because there's so much gray area, particularly in the wake of this Me Too climate that we have been in for the last few years, and so much gray area, like I don't know what's okay. I don't, for both men and women, I don't, like because so many stories came out about experiences that nobody knows anymore. So essentially, it's a lot of consent education, asking before even holding a hand or giving a hug, because even something like that can be really triggering for a lot of people, which as a self-proclaimed hugger, like that was new for me that people actually have traumas and triggers around even a hug. So yeah, it's fascinating. And so the more I got into that work and realized how much more of a therapy it is than just cuddling someone, I began to really see that the biggest need among most of my clients was men, and even more specifically, married men with kids. And that led me down a road where I started to look into, why is this the case? Why is the need greater among this population? And then from there, really being able to look back throughout my life, in terms of the men who have been in my life and other relationships that I've seen around me and how they have sort of deteriorated over time, and everything sort of clicked and made sense.
Right. Wow. So it came from being a Cuddlist, which I previously didn't know existed. That's amazing. That's what an
You're welcome.
amazing line of work.
Thank you.
Rachel, for years, I was emotionally closed off, and I didn't even know it. I was just, in my mind, I had three or four things that I felt comfortable sharing that were a little bit vulnerable. You know what I mean? Like they were a little bit like, oh, this is not something I want to broadcast on social media. Like, but I'll tell these things, and if I tell people these things, I'm emotionally open by virtue of telling them these things. But I knew that those things would elicit a positive reaction. I knew I tried and tested them. And meanwhile, I was squashing these thousands of other things, and how I was feeling on a daily basis, my daily emotions, and thinking, oh no, I'm emotionally open. Yeah. And since I've started the process of opening up, it's felt freaking amazing. But why do you think men are so closed off? Like, how did we get to this point where a lot of them, like me, don't even know it? Like, I had no idea.
Yeah, well, that's such an important point, and I am so grateful to you for sharing your experience with that journey as well. And it's one of those things where once you put it out there's no going back. It's like, okay, now I'm emotionally open and people see it and they're aware of it, and okay, this well, we're doing this. And so I'm really glad that when you sort of like tested the waters with that, you had positive feedback and, you know, it propelled you to be able to move forward. And now you have this amazing platform. And so where I believe that this resistance comes from goes all the way back to, you know, the beginning of man, because men, you know, caveman, we're talking like early men were, yeah, we're going way back. It was the role of the man to hunt and provide and protect and defend, right? So to display any sort of emotional vulnerability or reflection, or, you know, taking that pause to like, you know, assess what's going on could literally mean death. Mm-hmm. So that's hardwired into, you know, into men who it's sort of been compounded throughout time, because then as we see, you know, with wars and all of these things, like, again, your life is on the line if you show any mm-hmm. sort of like momentary pause or reflection or emotional acuity, because that's seen as a weakness. And so that just gets perpetuated throughout the stories as we continue to raise little boys and we tell them, you know, don't cry, don't be such a girl, don't be a pussy, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. even, and I think it's really subconsciously programmed even from parents of little kids, because, you know, what do we say to little kids, boys versus girls, when they fall down and skin their knee? You know, girls, we say like, oh, come here, my precious baby, you know, okay? Yeah. Like, oh, let me kiss your boo-boo. With boys, it's like, you're fine. Put some dirt on it.
Yeah. Put some dirt on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that conditioning takes place even now because of that hardwiring from the dawn of man that, mm-hmm. you know, boys are not supposed to show emotion because it is a weakness, whether it means literal, you know, death or pain of some kind, or whether it just means, you know, you're going to get mocked in front of your friends and you become like, oh, you know, you're such a girl, like, da, 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 you know, and that is seen as such a negative thing. So then that compounds as we grow older, because all of that conditioning and programming, you know, happens by the time you're like 7 or 8 that informs the rest of your experiences.
Right. Wow. Yeah. So it sounds like by and large, it's hardwired in a lot of little from a young age, from a little boy age, when we fall down, we scrape our knee and we're told, no, you're a man. You have to be strong, rub some dirt in that and get back up. Yeah. And we're not allowed to feel like, oh, that hurt.
Right. Exactly. Not allowed. There's no permission to like take that moment, like feel the pain.
Yeah,
that just happened. You know, it's like, move on.
Yeah,
you got to move on. You got to go do the next thing.
Right, right. And how, Rachel, can we change this? How? And I know from doing these podcasts, talking to a lot of men's coaches and people in the space, there's a lot of people optimistic that things will shift the other. Things are shifting the other way. Do you share that view? And how do you see this changing 20 years from now?
I do share that view. I see things changing already, but it's happening too slowly. So, you know, there's a lot more open-mindedness in terms of, you know, raising kids to express themselves naturally rather than put these conditions upon them from the time they're in the womb. And it's like girls are pink and boys are blue. That is opening up and evolving already, which is great, but it's happening really slowly to where that is going to benefit kids who are, you know, at a young enough age for that, but it still doesn't really help to undo the conditioning that's already been, you know, soaked in from the age of 8 for anybody older than that. And then especially it doesn't do anything to help older generations who are now out in the world and, you know, trying to navigate these dynamics and seeing, you know, like, okay, the world is sort of changing and I'm hearing that it's okay to speak out and share my emotions and my struggles, but that has not been my experience. So it takes time. It takes longer to sort of reprogram.
Right. Okay. I see what you, so you're saying the net for the coming generations, things are looking good. They're looking really good. But for the generations that we've already gone through our childhood, the conditioning's there. It's more about seeing the connection coach, perhaps.
Oh, it could be.
and trying to unravel some of that conditioning so that we can move forward as a more balanced human being. And yeah, awesome. And here's the other thing that I think it can happen for older generations, for people who are not 8 years old anymore, that ship has sailed. Is starting to redefine what it means to be strong as a man. Mm-hmm. And shifting that from push, you know, in sports is where I think of it the most, is like to be strong is to push aside all the noise, block out all the emotion, block out everything, and just like focus, like that hyper masculine focus on the task. But just interweave it like that. That's cool. Don't get me wrong. That's cool. But interweaving a vulnerability into that definition of strong, where it's like, I'm, you know, it's like, I can be badass guy on the court that, you know, pulling up from half court for the buzzer beater. Well, with 1,000 screaming fans, but also be open about like, I'm just going through some shit right now. Like mm-hmm. I'm not feeling great today. Like also having that aspect to it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree completely with that. It's pushing things away and shutting out the noise will only get you so far. And I don't know this for a fact, but I would be willing to bet that the top performing athletes who, you know, really are successful have some sort of mindset, you know, coaching or space or practice, whatever it may be, because that's such a huge part of being able to be efficient and perform well in any area of your life. It's not about, you know, shutting out the noise to distract from, you know, or deflect from what's going on. It's about shutting out the noise that you can let those things in and process it and allow it to sort of wash over you, but shutting out everything else. So it's not shutting out everything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would say that it's really about, you know, having a safe space and having a safe person, you know, whether that's the connection coach or not, but having somebody that you feel safe with and trust and feel like you can go to when you are having like a hard day or feeling not up to whatever it is, that you can genuinely show up that way in the roughest, bottomed out moment and say, I need to talk, and have that be received and say, I'm here for you. You know, what's going on, and be able to sit with that person, you know, without judgment, shame, criticism, or, you know, what we're seeing a lot now that's being talked about is toxic positivity. And, ooh, you know, yeah. Do you want to dig into that?
Elaborate on that one, please.
Yeah. So it's like we're such a society of drastic extremes, right? So it's like, don't be negative, be positive. So then what does be positive means? It's like, don't acknowledge what's happening right now and just be optimistic, blind optimism. You'll get through it. Don't worry. Tough times don't last. Tough people do, you know, all of these sort of tropes that like really are not helpful if you're in the shit and you're like, yeah, I hear you. I want to believe that, but I'm not there. I can't see that far ahead right now. And so that's when the positivity can become toxic, because it's about just like unacknowledging what somebody is going through. And, you know, pushing them forward in a way that doesn't feel authentic to them. And so what we need to do is be able to, in that space with somebody who's expressing that they need support in this moment, just sit with them in that space. And it can be really uncomfortable, especially if there's silence, but remembering that we don't need to be talking all the time. It's about being with someone and really being present with them and acknowledging their experience and asking them what they need.
Mm. Wow. Okay. I wrote down like 40 things from what you just said.
Let's go.
the first was, well, toxic positivity. I'd never heard that term before, but I love it, and I think it's very prevalent today. And it's the same as you're saying, telling me about it. It's the same as the athlete who's blocking out those emotions to focus on the game. Like it's still blocking out what the reality of what is being experienced, and with this delusional idea of like, oh no, it's all good. Like it's all good. I'm feeling amazing when really it's like I'm depressed and sad and lonely, and you know what I mean? And I love that. And as you were also describing this need to find safe spaces where we can share, we can open up, and we can let all of that out. Have you seen the Tiger Woods documentary on HBO?
I have not yet, but a friend told me about it and told me a bit about it, so it's on my list.
Okay. Well, yeah, would recommend. It's good.
Okay.
But it's crazy. His story is, and who knows, you know, how it's been altered to for
Sure.
this doc. Like, I don't know how factual it is, but he throughout his life he found these people who he could really open up with, and like literally, I think the words that popped in my mind are like hold space. Like they hold space for would hold space for Tiger's emotions, and Tiger would be, you know, use that as an outlet for a little while, and then would realize, no, I need to take this to the next level. Cut them out of his life. He would just stop. He just ghost them. And he would continually do that. And then it came to a boiling point, obviously, as everyone knows. I don't want to spoil the documentary, but
Well, I know the real life ending.
yeah. So but it just reminded me of his story. And what a better, I don't think there's a better example out there of a just hyper masculine dude, Tiger Woods, like on the prowl, winning golf tournaments. You know what I mean? So
Well, that's a really interesting example that you bring up. And if you'd like, I can go a little bit deeper into how why things played out the way that they did.
Oh, please.
So what's interesting there, you know, because I haven't watched it yet, but from everything that you're telling me as far as how he, you know, grew up and he would have these safe spaces, but then, you know, something would cut him off from feeling comfortable with that. And so, you know, I'll have to watch it to see if what I'm hypothesizing is accurate as far as that goes. But based on the information I have and how he ended up sort of blowing up his life, you know, and certainly his marriage, kind of goes into why men end up having affairs is because they are not feeling seen in their marriage anymore. And everybody, what connection really comes down to is feeling seen, and everybody wants to feel seen. And for men, because of the gender role conditioning and growing up being told not to show emotions and that's weakness, da 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 da, on and on, then the person that they choose to partner with becomes the one person that they feel like they can finally let that guard down with and open up to and share these things. But as the marriage continues, and for so many various reasons that connection sort of deteriorates over time, the man is not feeling seen anymore and is craving that sense of feeling seen, feeling like they matter in, you know, to somebody else, feeling like a man, you know, and feeling attractive and desired. And, you know, these are things that fade over time in a relationship. And so that's often why men will actually have affairs. It's not about the sex or wanting to leave the family and the marriage. It's about like, wow, I just connected with somebody who saw me and I haven't felt that way in a long time and it just happened. So in Tiger's case, what I'm, you know, connecting this to is that he had these experiences growing up where he had a safe space. He had people who would hold that space and allow him to feel safe to process, you know, whatever's going on. But then that sort of, you know, hyper masculine, you can't be emotional, you can't show yourself to anybody would step in and shut him off. And so it was like maybe a constant battle for him inside of his mind of like, I want to be seen, but I don't have anybody that I feel safe to be seen with. And, you know, if that safety in his marriage was also deteriorating, then it was like, I'm going to feel seen wherever I can feel seen.
Right. Right. Wow. Okay. Yeah. That from watching it, that makes a lot of sense. wow, that's crazy. And you say that this feeling of being seen, which is ultimately what as human beings, I think to an extent, we're all just looking for that, right? At the end of the day.
Yeah.
Why does that fade over time in relationships generally? Like what leads to that?
Yeah. So I think there are many different factors, but the biggest one being that when people start dating, you know, they don't show up to the dating sort of ritual or dance authentically as themselves. We're always, whenever we meet somebody that we are, you know, attracted to in a way that we, you know, see them as being a potential partner, we're always putting our best face forward and we're showing them what we think that they want to see. And we're not necessarily being authentically ourselves. That becomes a problem further down the timeline when we start to like feel safe to be more and more ourselves. And that person is not showing up the same way as the dating person that was like, yeah, I'm amazing. You know, like, let's go skydiving. When, you know, a couple years down the road, it's like, oh no, I'm terrified of heights. I will never do that again. But what? Yeah. You loved it. You know, like, that's a silly example, but it's to the point that when we don't show up authentically from the beginning, and that also where that really becomes important as well is not just with like things you like or value, but also with when it comes to what you're looking for in a partner, in a relationship, and then you get further in and it's like, this really isn't what I wanted. So part of it is, you know, when we set up a stronger foundation from the beginning, when we're dating people, then that can build a stronger foundation that will last longer because both parties feel more safe to be authentically themselves as the relationship evolves over time. But if that foundation is not there already, another thing that can lead to the deterioration, and this is, you know, might surprise people or, you know, trigger people. I don't know. But this is what I have seen in my experience and in my personal and my professional experience is that when kids come into the picture, the relationship dynamic takes a back seat because the kids become the main focus, and oftentimes more so for the mom than for the dad. And that's just because moms, again, are more encouraged and more, you know, comfortable with the nurturing sense. So it's more natural for the mothers to be more focused on the kids. I'm not saying that's a generalization, but that, you know, like typically that's what we see. And the dads get pushed in this mode of like, okay, I'm the head of the household. I've got this family to take care of. And then they're, you know, striving, working harder, working more hours, mom's working too. But, and now moms are working more too, but they're still doing most of the household stuff. So there becomes a disparity between the roles of both parents, but also the priorities and the focus change. And so the actual nurturing of that relationship, it's not happening. And it just becomes oftentimes like a roommate situation or like cohabitating, you know, and sometimes fighting and all these things because there's not time carved out for the couple anymore. And what I often see as well is women tend to, I hear this a lot from women who've been married for a long time. I don't know if they necessarily say this to their husbands, but I've heard it said in other women's groups like, oh, you know, so-and-so came crying to me about this and And, you know, I'm not his mom. If he wanted his mom, he should have married his mom. I have three other kids. You know, this is my fourth child now is my husband, you know? So we're sending these messages, which are mixed signals. And this comes back to the authenticity when we're dating, because women say a lot of times, you know, I want a sensitive man. Like, there's a lot of mixed messaging because women say, I want a sensitive man. But what they really mean is that they want a man who is sensitive to their needs, not necessarily a man who is sensitive to his own needs.
Right. What a distinction.
It's a huge distinction. So then when the man ends up coming home and saying, like, I had a really hard day, I need a hug, he gets met with, like, you had a hard day? Let me tell you about my day. Or, like, you don't know a hard day until you've had the day that I had with taking the kids here and here and here and here. And also I'm meeting a deadline and cooking dinner and doing your laundry and, you know, all of these things, to where husband no longer feels safe to come home and say, I've had a hard day, can I have a hug?
Right. Right.
So that, so the deterioration just continues.
Gotcha. Oh my God. There's so many reasons. yeah. So I'm intrigued that it sounds like it starts by and large at the beginning of a relationship, and just emphasizes how important that those first dates really are. What do you think? Like, it doesn't seem that important, but it's important. And it's, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, I'm like, I recently, because I'm single, and I go on, when I go on dates, primarily for years, my mindset had been, okay, Mitch, like, I get pumped up before the date. I'm like, oh yeah, like, got to show him how great Mitch is. Like, let's, let's put on a show. And I wasn't showing up totally authentically. I was kind of just trying to play the cards. I was trying to like, probably talking too much. I was really trying to, like, shove down their throat. They're like, I'm the best, you should choose me. And more recently, I've stopped doing that. I'm like, oh, what? I'm not, like, that something feels off about this and it's not working. And I've just kind of started showing up and being just like, I just want to learn about this person. I'm just going to show up as Mitch. I'm just want to learn, like, genuinely curious.
And that is the most attractive thing. Yes. Go on, please.
That's pretty much it. But the results, I would say, from this have been much better. Like, they've been opening up to me much, much more. I've actually felt the connections. It's not just like, me trying to spew stuff down their throats and hope they, you know, are like all over it. But yeah, early results have been very positive. But that was just what I was thinking of as you were describing, like, yeah, most relationships don't start from an authentic place.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing that. And it's so, you bring up a really good point. And there is, you know, it does serve a purpose, you know, in the beginning when you're first dating someone, like, yeah, A, you want to pump yourself up before a date because you want to feel confident going into it.
Yeah.
Also, you know, it's like, you don't just show up and be like, yeah, so I have depression and, you know, I go through periods of this that last for years sometimes. And, you know, I mean, like, you don't want to give it to them all at once. Yeah. I'm not saying, like, overshare, the authentic. Yeah. You know, it's like trickle. Like, as you develop safety and that trust is earned, you know, you let it. But it's, I guess what I mean when I say authenticity at the beginning is more like, you know, if the suggestion for the date is like, it's, you know, say 120 degree weather or something. Right. And the suggestion is like, yeah, hey, I know we were going to go grab lunch, but do you want to go for a jog? Like, you know, like a 2 mile jog before we go. And the response is like, yeah, okay. Because we're trying to be easygoing and low maintenance and like go with the flow. That's not like, no, speak up and say, you know what? That's really not appealing to me. So I'd prefer if we just go to, you know what I mean? So it's like,
right.
The deeper stuff comes out later. But in regards to your experience with that, you know, showing up and being like, this is why I'm amazing. And this is why, you know, like, you should totally want to be with me. It's so interesting. One, there's a book that I, recommend to anybody who is like trying to date. It's and the franchise is super well known, but the book that I read is Mars and Venus on a Date by John Gray, who is, you know, he is the father of like the whole Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus franchise. And it's fascinating. I learned so much about the way that men and women relate to each other during that sort of like dating ritual. And men are very, men relate to women in those, you know, early dates, the way that men relate to other men, which is competitive, like, I'm amazing. I'm going to show you all of my attributes. And this is why I'm the guy for you. You know, it's because that's how men are used to relating to other men in this masculine sort of way. Whereas women want to, you know, want to feel, like there's an interest being taken. So that's why you're seeing these results that women are responding so much more to you just being like, hey, you know, tell me about you. I'm really curious.
Right.
And you're, you know, as long as it's done in a very authentic way, which with you, I have no doubts that it is because you've come to this on your own, but like to organically be like, I really want to learn about you. Like what's, you know, what's XYZ that, Bravo, sir. Bravo.
Well, thank you. Thank you for validating my, my thing that I found that kind of works. And I should clarify the, I think the reason, because if I had been doing this show thing for years and years and years, and it from the start was not working, was not giving any validation, any, I probably would have changed earlier, but it, that, that was why it was a, such a trap is that I would go on, you know, 3, 4, 5 dates. And this strategy would work great through those. Like it would, you know, I could keep her attention. I make her laugh the whole time. The vibes are great, whatever. But after a certain point, the girl goes like, oh, we like, I don't feel any emotional connection with him. We just kind of like laugh and joke around for, you know, once a week. And at some point she goes like, oh yeah, our connection just not growing. Like this isn't working for me. Sorry. And that it was this recurring pattern. And I was like, something's going on here.
Yeah. You have such beautiful awareness.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's
you're welcome.
I appreciate that. But Rachel, how do you get so say I'm a dude who has no experience and this wasn't, this was me not too long ago, but I'm a dude with no experience being emotionally open. I'm super in that competitive, you know, hyper masculine caveman state. What, how do you recommend to dudes who are completely closed off in this way to start that process of opening? Like, is it going to a therapist? Is it seeing the connection coach? What does that look like?
Well, I typically invite people. I mean, my specific approach is, you know, as you see on my website, my whole sort of branding is through sports and football analogies. So I start by trying to speak that language where it often is easier for men to access those feelings and talk about feelings in terms of, you know, in terms like relating it to sports makes it easier. It's like an access point. We're talking about sex and wanting to get more sex. It's an access point because those are socially acceptable avenues that men who are super shut off, you know, could maybe start to open up a little bit more. But I also, you know, invite people to just sort of like visualize if they can, what it would feel like to have somebody in their life that they feel so safe to talk with, you know, and just like whatever pops into their mind as far as maybe like the most scary, painful thought that's coming up in that moment, whatever comes to mind, bring it forth and think, what would it be like to have somebody that I could actually say this to and feel like it would take some of that pressure off? And so then, you know, once you've kind of gone through that and maybe like several things come up that are like, I'm afraid about job security right now. I'm afraid that, you know, I won't be able to pay my kids' tuition next year, or, you know, all of these things that sometimes, especially when it's family man related fears in that sense of providing, you don't want to share those fears with your partner because you don't want to express that, that you're having these fears that affect the family, because you're supposed to be like that's the man job. Of the house and take yeah. care of the family. Yeah. So then those are things that compound the stress. So if you just like try to visualize some of these top, you know, current, most pertinent like fears and concerns and whatnot, and let it come in and think about what would it be like to have somebody who I could actually say these things to mm-hmm. and not feel judged and not feel criticized for not doing enough, not being enough of a man, not being enough of a provider, you know, and not also not being given advice, because mm-hmm. a lot of times what it comes down to is we don't necessarily want advice in that moment that we are, you know, finally willing to open up and be vulnerable and share with somebody what's going on. We just need to get it out. Because the more you keep it in and don't do something to process it, the more it's going to eat at you. And so it's in the act of letting it breathe air and have somebody witness that, that it can start to lighten that load and that pressure. So after doing that visualization and thinking like, what would it feel like? How might it change my everyday, you know, just mood and ability to function to have somebody like that, then start to think like, do I have somebody like that in my life currently? And, you know, go through sort of that mental Rolodex of your most intimate friends and family members and see if you have somebody currently in your life that fits that description. And if not, then, you know, look at seeking outside support from somebody who is not attached to outcome per se, or not attached to, you know, mutual people in the circle. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Great advice. And I love the advice of envisioning what it would feel like to be able to share those things that are in the debt, that are just rooted in shame, that are twirling around in the depths of us for years in some cases, and expressing those and just having those things heard. Cause I don't think there's a better feeling than exactly that, right? Just that weight off the shoulders. And there's a lot of guys, I know for a long time, I didn't know what that felt like. And so that's why I love that your advice is to imagine what that would feel like, and then seek out someone who can do this for you. If you don't have anyone, that's okay. You can go, you know, there's men's groups, there's therapy is always an option as well. There's the connection coach.
Yeah. There are lots of different places, you know, that one can go to for support. It's finding that right fit for you, because that's so important. You know, you have to be able to feel that level of safety and trust with whoever you're going to go to those depths of vulnerability with. And to the thing about feeling how it feels, I want to invite people who are going to do this exercise to, when you're thinking about how it would feel to have somebody like that, don't associate feel like, oh, it would feel good. I would feel hopeful. I would feel, because that's typically not language that men have. So I invite you to sort of connect to what would it feel like physiologically in my body to be able to have that sort of support, because that is language that men are more easily able to access in terms of how they're feeling. And from there, then they're able to associate that with like, oh, that feels good. And I feel lighter. I feel more hopeful, optimistic, you know, whatever. Yeah. So like you said, a weight being lifted off the shoulders, you know, that's a really great example of a way that somebody might feel, or just realizing that like, oh, my heart rate has slowed down. I'm breathing more softly and easily. And I'm not, you know, it's like, I'm taking full breaths again, you know, and just notice like if tension in your body dissipates or moves, or, you know, so that's a way to sort of tap into the feelings without it being like, ugh, feelings.
I love that, because that's totally how I have developed self-awareness. I've found that's the easiest way to do it, is like what feel into the body, how are we feeling right now, and through the body I feel like that it's just way more accessible. It makes way more sense to me than just being like, I don't know, how am I feeling right now, like I don't know.
Yeah.
it's just this access point that just is the source of knowledge that is much, it resonates much more and is much more accessible. Okay, let's change gears a little bit. What if it's not your partner that is emotionally, they're not even emotionally closed off. You're just not, maybe it's your mom, your dad, your sibling, whoever that is, a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is very prevalent, especially with dudes, is that, like, you know, as we started off the show with and you were describing, it's like, typically those dudes in your life, you talk about football, you talk about these things, but you don't talk about, like, you're not releasing the depths of your shame to your buddies. How can we go, and maybe we don't need to, you know, that's a good thing to note as well. Maybe that some relationships just don't require that. But how can we go about just seeking even just a little bit more emotional connection and emotional depth in all of our relationships, not just the, you know, our significant other?
Oh, you know, I love that you asked that question, because that is sort of the umbrella of why I do what I do. It's because the techniques that I engage in my practice and I coach people on, they're universal techniques. And because my whole sort of hope and ideal is that, you know, more people will be able to connect with each other on deeper levels so that more people feel seen, because that is what we are all craving so much. Yeah. So to answer that, it's really, I would say the simplest way to answer it is by being present and really dropping in when you're with your friend, your kids, your siblings, the barista at Starbucks, you know, whomever the case may be really present with that person. And the simplest, so there are techniques that are part of the coaching that I do, if that's an avenue that people want to take. But I would say that the simplest thing that somebody could do right now is eye contact.
Mm.
When you're with somebody, you know, whether it's on a Zoom or somebody right next to you or on the train, like I will be the first to admit that I'm the weirdo on the train that's like consciously making eye contact with strangers.
Yeah.
And that's like, I'm from Northern California. So like you know, people are always like, oh, you're from California. Like, it makes sense. But in New York, it's like, no, you do not engage. You do not engage. No,
yeah.
It's like everybody on the train is, you know, in a book or has their ear pods. And, you know, people are consciously like not engaging.
Right,
and I'm the one that's like waiting for somebody to make eye contact so I can smile at them and acknowledge their existence, you know? But so that's something that's just like so simple that you could do right away, is just starting to actively make eye contact with people. And even that in itself is an act and a gift of presence with somebody that will allow somebody, it'll sort of like open that channel to where somebody feels a little bit safer to engage with you. And if I don't know if you have time for this, but I have a story to that effect.
Oh, please share.
Okay. Because this happened just a couple weeks ago and it still blows my mind and I'm blissed out by it. But I had an hour commute each way on the train, and it was three separate trains. And I'm, you know, again, like trying to make eye contact. And now it's even harder for me to smile at strangers because of the mask. So it's like, I have to really exaggerate the eyes. Right. So I was leaving the train and at my station, and I was almost to the stairs to come up out of the subway, and I passed a man and, you know, just briefly, you know, like we made eye contact. He actually met my eyes and then we passed each other. And then I heard him say something, and it easily could have been somebody from further down in the station or up on the street, but something compelled me to turn around that he might've been talking to me. And I turned around and he had turned around and he had his arms out like this. And I said, what? And he said it again. I had to ask him like three separate times because it was muffled from the mask. And I didn't want to assume that I knew what he was saying. But when I eventually heard it right, he said, can I get a hug?
Aww.
And I was like, yes. yes, you can. And so we hugged and it was magical because the hugging, you know, that act of that hug, so there's a magical thing, you know, this is more cuddlist conversation, but in as little of 20 seconds with healthy platonic touch with somebody, oxytocin is released. And that's a bonding hormone. And it's a feel good hormone. And it lowers the cortisol and the stress response. And it helps you to feel calmer. So I'm, you know, as I said before, I'm a proclaimed hugger. But it was so random to me that this stranger, this person would just not only have the vulnerability to speak to a stranger, because again, like, we don't do that, especially in the Me Too era, and especially in the political climate that we're in the States.
Right.
It's like, no, you know,
you don't do that. Yeah.
No. And he was vulnerable enough to say anything to me, first of all, but then to, like, the first thing out of his mouth was, can I get a hug? I'm like, I'm not wearing any sort of cuddlist paraphernalia. There's nothing on me that says, like,
during
free
COVID.
Hugs, ask me for a hug. Yeah. Right. You know, but something about my energy, like, just, I don't know, compelled him to ask for a hug. And we hugged and we shared this moment. And and then we separated and he was like, thank you so much. That really brought a smile to my face. And I just said, how are you doing? Are you like, are you doing okay? He's like, yeah, I'm okay. He's like, but thank you so much for that. Can I get another hug? And I said, yeah. And so we hugged again and then we separated and that was it. Strangers to start and strangers to end. And it was just a really beautiful moment of human connection where he felt seen in that moment that I made eye contact and smiled at him, that he was able to ask for a hug.
What an amazing story, you know, just connecting with someone on the subway station in New York.
Magical.
And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful example that you can connect with anyone. Like, they, it doesn't have to be this significant person in your life. There's connection to be had everywhere. And it's funny that you told this and that it happened in New York, because I was talking to a friend on over Zoom the other day, and they were saying that they're like, oh dude, I used to hate New York City. Like, because I, every time I'd go there, I just felt like everyone would brush by, they'd have their head down, they'd be, they'd like knock my shoulder, like they're always in a rush. And then he's like, then I changed the way I looked at it. I started like engaging, I started making eye contact with people, smiling at people, and all of a sudden everyone's doing it back to me. And now I love New York City. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. And it just, that just reminded me of exactly what you're doing, which is through that, that energy, that eye contact. It's amazing what we can do with our, with just bringing our own energy.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing that story too. That really like warms my heart, because it is, it's, everything is energy. We are all just energy, and how we bring our energy affects other people's energy. Mm-hmm. And something as simple as eye contact and a smile can really make the difference in somebody's day. It really, really can. And you end up getting that back more as well.
Right, right. Yeah, especially these days, you know, a lot of fear out there, a lot of a lot of fear out there. And so a little eye contact, a little smile, maybe a hug.
Yeah.
goes a long way.
If you're a yes to it. But, you know, boundaries is another big piece of this. So know your boundaries. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Okay, Rachel, I really enjoying this conversation. But this is the final question I ask all guests on the show. The question being, if you could send a message to yourself, to the version of yourself specifically that was at the lowest point of your life, what would that message be?
What just sort of popped in immediately was hang on. Like, hang on for the ride, because it is a ride and there are peaks and valleys and ebbs and flows, and it's all meant for you. So you're doing great. Keep going. Hang on.
Rachel, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it. Let's
thank
keep in
you
touch.
Mitch, yes, this is awesome. I appreciate what you're doing so much. Thank you for having me.